Ho, ho, ho! Jingle balls, jingle all the way. Shave your nuts without the cuts, look fresh on Christmas Day. Hey!
Hey!
It's the Fight Disciples. Welcome back once again to our show, sponsored by Manscaped.com. For all your defuzzing this festive period, get on our website, Manscaped.com, and hit the code FIGHT20 for your discount. Why should they do it, Nicholas? Why should they defuzz this Christmas?
Because Santa Claus should be the only thing that's big, fat and hairy on Christmas Day.
Correct. And that's a message from our very own Saint Nick. Manscaped.com, FIGHT20 the code. Let's get on with the podcast.
This is Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 451. We are the Fight Disciples. This is dedicated to the world of boxing. If it's the first time you've ever come across us, you know what you should be doing by now, seeing as that I've no doubt you've listened to other podcasts and done the exact same thing. Hit the subscribe button. You can do it on iTunes. And if you'd be so kind as to write us a five-star review, it just helps with our visibility in the iTunes chart. We are on a website as well, fightdisciples.com, where you can get all Android feeds, social media feeds. There's a link there to our shop. We are selling beer. It's our own beer. Yes, that's right. Proper Tackle is available now. And if you order it this week, it will be guaranteed to be delivered in time for Christmas. So you're sat round. We are facing a load of meat and spuds and washing it down with our ale. There you go. Get yourself stuck in. Fightdisciples.com. Lots to talk about in this beautiful world of boxing.
Rant about.
No, I'm in a good space. You know that I'm in a good space now. It's all positivity.
I'm talking about you, I'm talking about me.
All right,
I'm
okay.
Fuming today.
Why?
Fuming, I'm livid.
What are you fuming about?
Everything.
Are you?
Everything and anything.
Listen, just bear in mind, whatever you say now over the next hour will probably determine whether you're going to be joining me on the Floyd Mayweather Logan Paul broadcast. All right? So just bear that in mind. We will talk Floyd, Logan. We will talk Snoop Dogg and Triller. We will talk Glenn McCrory and Evander Holyfield. Sportsman at weekend, it's on, you know. Sports of Glenn at weekend. Anyway, we'll get to all that later on, because let's talk about actual boxing. Because that type of stuff is the entertainment side of entertainment. It's not even sport, is it really? The entertainment side of entertainment. This boxing from the weekend. And we were treated last week. Let's be honest. We were treated. We had stuff on Wednesday night, Friday night, Saturday night, all to get stuck into. And there's loads of talking points that come off the back of it. Going into the weekend, the biggest talking point was, is Errol Spence still Errol Spence? Well, I think he ticked that box, and we'll get to that a little later on. Because I think the biggest talking point coming off the back of the weekend is everything that happened at Church House in the main event. In the light heavyweights, we had Anthony Yard taking on Lyndon Arthur. Lyndon Arthur got the job done. He won via a split decision. Now, do you want to talk about the fight first? Do you want to talk about the reaction to the result first? Or do you want to talk about the cards first? That 117-111. Because I've got it all written down here, mate, and I'm ready to go. So I'll let you choose. You can go first. Which way do you want to go?
Let's go with the positive. The positive being Lyndon Arthur showing all that amateur experience and proving once again, back to back on Frank's shows, that a very good pedigree amateur boxer who turns pro, who knows the value of a jab, is able to win over a puncher 9 times out of 10. Lyndon Arthur did it, just like Joe Joyce did it. In fact, just like Errol Spence did it as well later on in the evening. The jab is the most undervalued punch in a boxer's arsenal. And for the third main event running, it was proved. And Lyndon Arthur, let's be honest, did it with only a jab, unlike the other two. Only a jab. Wins 12 rounds with only his jab. And you know what? I thought it was a wonderful performance. And I tweeted midway through the fight to say, if Lyndon Arthur's able to get the victory here effectively with one arm, do not disparage what a great performance this is. And unfortunately, Anthony Yard's response post-fight has overshadowed what a magnificent display Lyndon Arthur put in.
Yeah. Now, I'd agree with that. It seemed quite evident. I mean, I was on the radio at the time and we were texting back and forth, because I was watching it without sound on and watching it out the corner of my eye originally. I've watched it back since and I've got a full scorecard here if anybody's asked about it. But you were just keeping me up to date with what was going on. And then one of the tweets, I think it was after the third or fourth round, you said, is he going to throw a right hand or what? And then I watched the commentary back, so I've kind of picked up on how everybody else was responding to it. And nobody picked up on that until about the seventh or eighth round in the commentary and in the Anthony Yard corner.
Tunde, after about nine rounds, Tunde went, "Anthony, I've spotted something. Nobody else has probably noticed this, but I've spotted that Lyndon is not throwing the right hand." I thought, fucking hell, Tunde, you woke up on the wrong side of bed this morning, pal. I noticed that in after three rounds.
But credit to Lyndon Arthur. Got the job done. Like you said, I thought it could have been made more difficult for him via his opponent, which we're going to get to in a minute. But Lyndon Arthur, like you said, his jab was absolutely bang on. If he had two hands, God knows what he would have done in that fight, because he may even have gone through the gears himself. I thought he was absolutely top class. Onwards and upwards for him. And for me, there's going to be chat now about rematches and various things like that. I don't think Lyndon Arthur has to do that if he doesn't want to. He's done the business. He's got the victory. His next step for me would be moving forward in this division. It's a division that's wide open. We know that Smith and Vlasov are going to go for the titles shortly. And he's in prime position now, Lyndon Arthur, to be making that step. Don't get me wrong. We can maybe revisit this in 12, 24 months' time if there's a nice little trinket on the mantle there. But for me, Lyndon Arthur did the job. It's a fantastic victory for him, move forward. Then what we have is the discussion of the post-fight interviews and what happens next for Anthony Yard. Now, we've both spoke to Anthony. We've both spoke to Tunde. And I've got a lot of time for both of these dudes, actually. I like them as people, first and foremost. What we also must do is credit the level that this team has got to.
Yeah.
Last year, they were fighting Kovalev in Russia for a world title on limited amateur experience, on limited professional experience. They've come up with this new regime and way of fighting, and it has got them nearly to the promised land, nearly to becoming world champions.
Yeah.
Now, that's got to be commended.
It was two or three punches away from beating Kovalev in Russia.
Absolutely. And that's got to be commended, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But it was evident at the weekend there are fundamental flaws to Anthony Yard's game. He has got the raw ingredients to go all the way, in my opinion, in this sport. All the way. But when you actually watch that fight properly over a 12-round period, you see that he can't cut off the ring. You see that he doesn't understand how to get past Lyndon Arthur's jab, how to inflict his own jab, and basically go through the gears, I suppose, in this fight. Then you start to question what's being learned, where are you at now in your professional game, and do you need, not just you, does your whole team, do your whole need to change attitude in order to push you forward and get you to the next level? Because you've conquered British, European and Commonwealth level. I know that he lost at the weekend at that level, but he's been there, done that, and he's been up at world level. Can he get back up to world level? I think he can, but changes have to be made, not only with his own attitude and understanding of the boxing game, but also the people around him. That their attitudes have to change in order for him to kick on. And I've seen on social media loads of people having a bit of a go that he needs to leave Tunde, he needs to go and do this. Maybe so. But there's credit in loyalty sometimes. And don't get me wrong, there's blind loyalty, I get that. But there's credit in loyalty sometimes where I think everybody has to sit down, have a proper conversation, and maybe change certain aspects of that training in order for them to kick on. Because what they're doing right now will not get them to the next level, in my opinion.
Yeah, listen, I agree with everything you've said in terms of Tunde and Anthony Yard. You know, we did a show for Frank and we had them both on, and I like them both. They've got cool little personalities, and they're a real click. And I think Tunde and Anthony Yard will be together a long time, potentially all of Anthony Yard's career. It's just that they've got each other's back kind of thing, and Anthony Yard is completely bought in on Tunde's system. And Tunde is completely bought in on his own system. You know, he believes sparring isn't required. Him taking Anthony Yard on the pads is better than any sparring session. And I don't think you're ever going to change that about them. And maybe you don't need to. But the issue I had at the weekend wasn't necessarily with the system itself, because the system has beaten 20 other men. You know, it obviously works in a way. There's a question mark whether it works against the next level. And that includes, obviously, Kovalev and Lyndon Arthur being a very experienced amateur. There's obviously question marks about it now. But the biggest issue I had with it was the lack of comprehension in Yard's corner about how the fight was going. Why were they so skewed into thinking Anthony was actually winning those rounds? Like, at the end of the fight, Yard was convinced he'd won it by a mile. He was convinced he'd won it hands down.
So was he and John Lewis, mate.
we'll come on to him in a minute, but there's nobody in that corner. And I've seen a lot of people going, he needs different corner team. They're all fucking yes men, blah, blah, blah. And listen, Tunde calls the shots and it is what it is. But you'd think that somebody, whether it was in that corner, whether it was part of Frank Warren's team, somebody you would believe would have the ear of that corner to feed information to them to say, listen, man, fucking hell, come on. You're down here. You're behind. Especially when a fight is a little bit nip and tuck like that. There was a lot of rounds that weren't clearly won by anybody, except Lyndon Arthur's landed more jabs and Anthony Yard's plodding after him rather than cutting the ring down. So you think, well, when you know it's a close round, that's when you start looking around. If you're in a corner, I've been ringside many, many times over the years, scoring fights, working as a journalist, an independent, and a corner that have known me on a personal level or whatever it may be, will have looked to me after four or five rounds and just go like, have we got it? Because in the corner, you can be skewed, you can be, because all you're listening to is the advice that the lead corner's given. So if you're the cut man in that corner or the second or the third, it's widely kind of fucking done that you look around and look for people favourable in the audience that you can go, have you got it? Just so you can get it right in your own mind. And I'd like to think that somebody at ringside would have fed back to team at Yard to go, Arthur's up, or it's very close, or whatever it may be. But it's like they just have blinkers on. And I don't want to vilify them by dubbing it as arrogance, but it felt like Anthony Yard and Team Yard went into it with so much arrogance that they truly believe that Yard is world-class, that he missed out by a three-punch combination, become a world champion. That's it now. He's up here. Lyndon Arthur, still Commonwealth champion. We've done that. We're ahead of him. And the arrogance they had of not respecting what Lyndon Arthur could do and did do on the night blinded them into believing that Yard just pushing forward but not landing punches was somehow winning him a fight. Crazy, man. Crazy corner work. And he's paid the price for it. And unfortunately, as much as I like Anthony and as much as I like Tunde, they needed that. Maybe they needed that little bit of a bring them back down to where put their feet on the ground.
Yeah, maybe you're right in what you're saying that they needed that, but then you've got to realise it. When it happens, you've got to realise that it's happened, and then you've got to understand as to why you have lost that fight. Everything that I have seen post-fight, interviews with Anthony and with Tunde, it seems incredible denial. It seems incredible denial that what has happened. That they're saying that they've been robbed and that, you know, we're not seeing that as an actual loss. This is a lesson, and we don't necessarily need those lessons because we're so far ahead of X, Y, and Z. You've got to fully understand why you got beat in that fight. If you can't understand why you got beat in that fight, then there's a problem, a real problem, because it's just going to keep happening over and over and over again. The blueprint is now set on how to beat Anthony Yard. It's very simple. If you've got boxing fundamentals, if you've got good amateur pedigree, you whack your jab out, you get on your toes because he doesn't know how to cut the ring off. That's it. End off. And you will win the fight. It's very, very simple. Like we said at the start of this, they're tight. They're loyal. It's a nice relationship that they've got there. I get that. I personally now, to go to the next level, if I was Anthony Yard, and listen, Anthony, if you ever do listen to this podcast, you're the managing director of your company, mate. This is your career. Yeah. It's nobody else's career. In years to come, I've no doubt Tunde will continue to train other fighters. You're only here for what, the next 10 years, let's say? And then it's done, and then you're on to something else, pal. In that period of time, you've got to squeeze every little drop out of your career and push it to the limit in order to achieve all the things that you wish to achieve. I would have a sit-down conversation with my mates, my team, Tunde and the gang, and I said, listen, guys, I think we need to bring in another person. That other, just to oversee stuff, you know what I mean? Someone who's been there, done it, got the T-shirt. I was listening to Andy Lee on comms and part of the team at the weekend. And do you know something? A couple of weeks ago, we gave him a bit of a bashing for a card that he dished out, didn't we? But I tell you something, yeah. Andy Lee, over the last couple of weeks, listening to him on BT, has been absolute mustard. Right. Yeah, he is. Absolutely. On the with everything that he's called, whether it be the Tyson and Jones Jr. thing last week or the weekend with Yard and Arthur, I thought he was absolutely on the ball. Imagine having that experience. There's a reason why Tyson Fury's got him there. There's a reason why Sugar Hill has got him in that corner because of that knowledge and the way that he sees things. Maybe someone like that, I'm not saying absolutely Andy Lee, but someone like that, just to bring in and say, right, we're going to work together now to take this kid to the next level because he's got it. He's got whatever it is. He's got the showbiz element of this. Yeah, well, he's got the showbiz element of this sport as well, which you need in order to sell yourself. He's a very likable guy. You've got he's got incredible power, and I think he can be taught all the things that he doesn't know, and he can pick them up quite quickly. So I hope that those conversations are going on. If they're not, and it's denial, and it's well, you know what I mean, we just got robbed. It's going to happen over and over and over again. And it'll be a shame for Anthony Yard not to realise the things that he could realise by not giving himself a fair crack of the whip.
Yeah, and just one last thing on that fight before we move on. I just want to reiterate again because, you know, all credit to Frank. His 40th anniversary hasn't exactly gone to plan, but he's put together
absolutely
two great fights back to back. And you've got to respect that, whether you're a Matchroom guy or a Frank guy or a BT guy or a Sky Sports guy. Well, if you label yourself as a boxing fan as either of those things, you're fucking mental. You should just want to see the best fights like we all do. But I think Frank has put his balls on the line with two main events that have, you know, let's be honest, blown up in his face a little bit, but he's give us what we wanted, two great fights.
But
Have they
blown up in his face? Because, yeah, all right, fair enough. Dubois, Joyce. Frank was,
in Dubois.
Yeah, and I kind of like the fact that he didn't sit on the fence. He said, listen, I think Daniel Dubois will win this fight. Joe Joyce wins the fight. But he's still, Frank still has a contract to promote him. So he's still progressing there, and he's still got Daniel Dubois to bounce back. And obviously with this at the weekend, I never really listened to much in the build-up to it. I don't know where Frank's head was at, but he's still Lyndon Arthur's promoter. He still gets to push him forward. The beautiful thing about this, and you've nailed it, right? I don't want this to put off promoters. I don't want this to put off young fighters with undefeated records, risking
good
things.
Fights.
Just make top fights. We've had 2 weeks now of two main events that were very well matched. Yes, at the weekend, it was a difficult watch. It was, because not much action went on because both guys were in respect of the other and maybe one guy didn't necessarily know what to do once it got to that level, all right? But on paper, two brilliant fights back-to-back. We need more of this. We need to encourage it more. Don't slag it off. Don't say, ha-ha, that blew up in your face. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit about that. Make the fight. Kudos to Frank. Kudos to Queensbury. Well done. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Yeah. Keep taking those risks because in the long term, you will win. Keep doing it.
Yeah, completely agree, man.
Ian John Lewis. Listen, bro. Come on, man. Now, I could go back through historical cards, but the most recent one that springs to mind is that Ian John Lewis gave it to Terry Harper over Natasha Jonas, right? That's the most recent one that springs to my mind. And I've no doubt Joe Gallagher's listening to this podcast, rubbing his hands together now going, here we go. The lads are going in. Here we go. At the weekend, we've already said it's nip and tuck. There's a lot of tight rounds. What are you watching to score that fight 117? 111. Are you sat next to the guy that is shouting lions in the camp? Are you the guy that is actually shouting lions in the camp? Because that scoring of that fight is horrific. If he'd have scored it 115, 114 Yard, I'd have gone, okay. 117, 111 is diabolical. And we can sit here and we can joke and we can laugh about it. And there'll be people listening here who heard that card and they'll go, oh, fucking hell, boxing again. No, not boxing again. We've got to stop this shit. People have got to be held accountable for what they are doing. And there's some truth in what Anthony Yard was saying post-fight, where he was talking about, this is my life, this is my career, this is this, this is that. He was kind of talking the other way around to the other judges, right? But he's right. Ian John Lewis potentially robbed Lyndon Arthur of a very significant moment of his career by scoring a fight absolutely ludicrously. There's no way on God's green earth that fight is 117, 111. I can understand 115, 114 or 115, 113 if you've not gone for a 10-10 at any point in the fight in favour of Anthony Yard. I can understand it through squinted eyes. I didn't see it, but I can understand it through squinted eyes. But to score it 117-111 is an absolute joke, mate. And proper repercussions need to be upheld now. We had the Terry O'Connor thing a couple of weeks ago where he got dragged into the British Boxing Board of Control and he just went, Terry, it was just lip service. Can't have just lip service. Come on, man. Got to hold these people to account.
Yeah, it's kind of outrageous, isn't it? Because we know what all... The board won't look into it because the board will just come back and go, well, that's just his take. That's just the way he's seen it.
And the right man won anyway.
That'll be the bottom line. The right man won, so it's okay. No, it's not okay. It's not okay. He has absolutely scored this completely wrong. You know, do we dub Ian John Lewis Wormtail now? Do we just call him Wormtail? Voldemort's fucking one of his little Death Eater friends. Is that what we've got to do? Because
you watch too much Harry Potter, mate. You watch too much.
It's unacceptable is the bottom line. It's unacceptable. And, you know, I'm rather like wanting to sit down with Anthony Yard. I would love to sit down with Anthony Yard on Sunday and sit with them when they score that fight back. When they sit down and watch that fight this week and they score it back, I would love to be in the room and they go, well, that was our round. And I go, no, whoa. Let's just press rewind on this. Similarly, I'd love to sit down with Ian John Lewis and go, come on then. Let's watch the fight now, 12 rounds. You show me how they win those rounds. And I think that needs to be done more with the border control, with some of these decisions, especially with Voldemort, now increasingly with Ian John Lewis. You know, these people are writing these scorecards. These judges are writing these scorecards in their heads before they sit down at ringside. And that is not fair on Lyndon Arthur. It's not fair on the, in brackets, away fighter. I know Lyndon Arthur wasn't the away fighter, but let's be honest, rather like Joe Joyce last week, I bet he felt like the away fighter. Mm. So it's unacceptable, you know, and unfortunately, you know, it's pushing towards a reform in the way we judge fights ultimately, because it's a conversation that keeps coming up. And just like in football, if you moan long enough and long enough, some bright spark comes up with VAR and then you're completely fucked. And it's going to go the same with boxing. If Ian John Lewis and fucking Voldemort keep putting in shitty scorecards, eventually the sport will try and make change. And one, it'll get worse or it'll get better. Two, Ian John Lewis won't be sitting ringside ever again because the judges won't be used at ringside anymore. So
just get competent people. That's all that needs to be changed. You need to justify what you've said. And if you can't justify what you've said, then you need to be demoted to a level that you can repractice and get better at, and then you can come back to the Premier League. That's basically what happens with refereeing. This is what needs to happen with judging in the world of boxing.
But it's the same two dozen judges that work every television event, though, isn't it? Yeah. There's a pool of a dozen or 20 guys that will always be at Frank and Eddie shows. It's always the same judges and referees. The same pockets. Marcus MacDonald, Michael Alexander, Ian John Lewis, Victor Laughlin. It's all the same guys regurgitated for every event. So Ian John Lewis isn't going to get demoted. He'll be fucking working the event this weekend, probably. That's the problem.
Car crash. What car crash? Never happened. Errol Spence is back. The big question going into the weekend was how much that car crash took out of Errol Spence and whether he still had it. Fair play to him and his team for taking Danny Garcia. In hindsight, loads of people will come out now on social media going, oh, Danny Garcia is not all that. What are you fucking talking about? Danny Garcia is no mug. He is on the cusp of the top boys at 147, right? Yes, he might not be Crawford. He might not be Thurman or Pacquiao, but he's only a touch underneath the likes of that, all right? He's been there, done it. Look at the guys that have beaten him. They're all elite. They're the guys, all right?
So to beat Thurman as well. Yeah, that loss is undeserved.
So to jump in with Danny Garcia straight off the back of that car crash, you think to yourself, right, we're going to get some answers here to see where this kid's at. There's no point in having a knockover tin can, which we would have all forgiven him for. He's having a proper fight. And from the very first bell, mate, he never missed a beat. The kid is superhuman. Fair play to him. He's back. He looked as good, if not better, than he did when he fought Porter car crash. You mentioned it at the start of the show. The jab, the boxing fundamentals. The beautiful thing about Spence that I noticed at the weekend is A lot of people, again, I pick all this up on social media and people's takes on how to score fights and whatever. A lot of people think boxing is a back foot thing. You know what I mean? So people like, they're sat back, they're on the jab, they're boxing, they're keeping the brawler at
counter punching.
Yeah, all that. That's a lot of people's take. That's what it's the boxer. You watch what Spence does at the weekend. He's a boxer that comes forward. He's unbelievable. His technique, his shot selection, the way that he goes about his work is absolutely top drawer. I thought he was brilliant. And the only thing now for me coming off that fight is, why is neither him or Crawford gobbing off? We ain't getting that fight. And this is the thing that makes me feel sad coming off the back of it, because they've got me revved up now. Crawford's taken Brook to pieces. You've got Spence doing the business against Garcia. The only fight that any boxing fan should want right now at 147 is this. Our version of Leonard Hagler. That's what we should all be smashing the drum for. But I've got a funny feeling we ain't going to see it. And I think this time next year, we'll be still saying the same thing about trying to make this fight.
Yeah, we're definitely not going to get it anytime soon. Crawford was sitting ringside, for fuck's sake. They didn't even get him in the ring.
I know.
They didn't even speak to him mid-fight. They didn't interview him.
The broadcast.
They did fuck all.
The broadcast
was an absolute car crash.
They're not even mentioning him. PBC, it doesn't exist. They were saying that this is the best against the best. It's Spence versus Garcia.
Nonsense.
Hang on. Garcia's not even in the top 10, you clown.
Yeah,
You've got one of the pound-for-pound best on the planet sat there. That's the best against the best. That's the narrative that you should be pushing.
Yeah, and they absolutely ignored him. It was embarrassing. It was car crashing. It was everything that's wrong with boxing at the moment. You know, let's dig deeper into the fight itself. Yes, Danny Garcia is a live opponent. Yes, he is top 10 welterweight on the planet. But he was also doing his best work at light welterweight. He hasn't been a world champion in a long time. He peaked in about 2012, 2013, when he beat Amir Khan and Eric Morales and Zab Judah. That was his peak then. He's not peaking now. He is on the back foot defensive counterpuncher by nature. So Errol Spence was always going to be able to just unload on him. He was handpicked to be the opponent he was. He was PBC brought in-house to ensure that if Errol has a slip, then Danny gets to keep the belt and we rematch it and Errol bounces back. But as it turned out, he was absolutely tailor-made for Errol Spence, which is why everybody on the planet predicted a comfortable points win. And that's exactly what Errol Spence got, a comfortable points win. I expected it. We all knew it was coming. And that's what we got. What we didn't get was what boxing needs more than anything. And this is why the door is open for fucking Tyson and Roy Jones and for Floyd Mayweather and YouTubers and for fucking all this other circus car crash sport entertainment rather than competitive boxing. The door is being left open because the best boxers on the planet won't call each other out, won't build a narrative, can't sell a fight. Errol Spence and Terence Crawford, the both of you, are a fucking embarrassment to the sport of boxing. An embarrassment. All the talent in the world, and you don't even know what the sport's about. All you want is the money. They all want to be billionaires. They all want to swan around and fucking drive Ferraris and want the respect of fans all over the world. And yet they don't even know how to sell a fight. They don't even know how to fucking come together and have a fucking argument and to build it and to sell it in this day and age. Are you fucking kidding me? And they're trying to charge $75. That was $75 in America. Errol Spence versus Danny Garcia, a set-up fight. $75. Crawford in the audience, don't even get him out. Fucking commentary team, don't even mention Crawford. An absolute embarrassment. No wonder boxing's on its ass. No wonder we're desperate for fucking circus fights. What a pile of shit. What a pile of steaming shit that was at the weekend. Fucking PPC, fuck off. The sooner Dana White buys that shit, the better, because they're fucked. If that's boxing, you can fucking keep it. Bollocks to you.
You all right?
Pissed off. Pissed off.
Listen, you can't blame a dude for wanting to chase a few quid, man. They've got to look after themselves, aren't they? You've got the Pacquiao fight on the horizon. Someone's going to make some coin there.
I just want to see, how good is Errol Spence? Could be one of the best welterweights of all time. Likewise, Terence Crawford. But we're never going to find out because they're never going to fight each other. Mm. Two of them should be fucking embarrassed to hold their heads up high in public. Mm. It's a shame, man. Clueless. Absolutely clueless.
Yeah, but you're talking about the integrity of the sport. You're talking about the best against the best. That's what you're talking about. And that's what we all want. There's no doubt about that. But from their point of view...
They won't even say each other's name. Yeah. They won't even say each other's name. They're fucking cowards.
Well, from their point of view, they're being managed by people, aren't they? And they're thinking, right, what's the most dangerous fight? The most dangerous fight's the other guy. So once I fight that guy, there's going to be a result there, whether we win or lose. And it's nip or tuck. We don't know who's going to win a fight between Spence and Crawford. So off the back of that, because of this defending your own narrative that Floyd Mayweather absolutely rammed down all our necks for such a long period of time, those fighters believe that once that happens, the earning potential then dwindles. So what do you do before you get to that fight? You cash as much as you can. So therefore, there's a Pacquiao fight there waiting for people. They could probably have a little bit of a tangle with Thurman, can't they, and make a few quid. Then you move on to the super fight. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying what's happening. Because Mayweather did this for 5 years with the Pacquiao fight.
Yes, but prior to that, he was the biggest pay-per-view star in the sport because he beat everybody and he gave them a fucking good hiding. And then he got De La Hoya in the ring and he whipped him. And then he took over the mantle of boxing's biggest pay-per-view star.
Yeah, and then he dictated
able to dictate the narrative. Errol Spence is not where Floyd Mayweather was. Errol Spence hasn't wiped the slate clean and gone, bum, I'm the guy. Errol Spence is trying to charge us $75 to watch him fight fucking his stablemate, Danny Garcia, in a setup fight. And then afterwards, he says, when someone asked him about Terence Crawford, he went, I wouldn't even go to a Terence Crawford fight. What the fuck are you talking about? No idea. No idea how the sport works, either of them. An absolute joke. An absolute joke. Let's talk about something good. Let's talk about last Wednesday, Jazza Dickens. Absolutely majestic performance against Ryan Walsh. Once again, the narrative is set for the last fortnight, and it's good because this is the thing. while the guys at the top of haven't got a clue how to sell a fight, I want to pay homage to the fact that MTK have put this tournament together, probably at great loss. It's delivered every step of the way so far. I've been really into the golden contract. But once again, this is the narrative at the moment. The better boxer wins. This is boxing. It's not fighting. Jazza Dickens was a better boxer than Ryan Walsh. And we're seeing that a lot at the moment. The fundamentals are right. If you've got the right foundations, the right footwork, the right schooling in the sport, we're in an era at the moment where better boxers are winning, which is nice. Boxing should be buzzing right now. It should be on the up instead of fucking lurching from one stupid pay-per-view to the next. This is the stuff we should be celebrating. And listen, I thought Ryan Walsh gave it everything he had. He just come up against a better man on the night. I thought Jazza Dickens was brilliant. And then the two of them, the way they embraced at the end, the scoring was spot on. Yeah, man. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Wednesday. Yeah. It never frustrated me.
Well, I liked two things, actually, from Wednesday, because Blotnick's as well got a fantastic victory for himself. I mean, a man that nobody thought that was going to win the light heavyweight version of this tournament.
Yeah.
And then he gets on the microphone and rocked it. And I thought, you're a guy I want to see again, man. You've shown me some personality. You've shown me that you could do bits in the ring. Yeah, there's boxing fundamentals there, but you obviously love a scrap as well. I'm in on the Blotnick's train. Obviously, we know Jazza, and we know Jazza well. He's a lovely lad, isn't he? Maybe the opportunities haven't come his way throughout his career that would justify his talent. But he's had this opportunity with the golden contract. He's taken it. He boxed beautifully. And then what I liked about his post-fight interview is that he got on there and it wasn't like a relief of, right, I've won this and we're done and we're all going to go and enjoy Christmas. It was straight on going, nah, man, I ain't done. This
won a world title.
This was all about platform. I'm here now. You've given me the platform. You've seen me do me thing. I want to get back to the level when I was fighting the likes of the Rigon Dows of this world, and I want to be fighting for world titles. That's where I'm at, and I kind of like that from Jazza's post-fight interview. And hopefully, people now, Sky Sports, MTK, can get behind him and start shoving him into those fights, because I think he's matured as a guy. I think he's fattened out a little bit, and you know what I mean? He's comfortable now with his body, and I think he might be able to cause a few upsets in 2021.
Is that a top rank deal they both got now then? Is that the golden contract?
I don't know.
They haven't really announced it. It's been kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called golden contract. You were supposed to win a golden contract with a top promoter.
Yeah.
But There's been no like fanfare to go, he's now signed with Matchroom or Frank or MTK or Top Rank or whatever. It's kind of weird. But anyway, I enjoyed Wednesday much Friday? More than I enjoyed Friday.
Friday, man. Jeez. I've left again underwhelmed. So underwhelmed. Yeah. And there's more. And again, Martin's our mate. Yeah. He's a top lad. And we were on record saying, listen, we don't begrudge him getting another shot. Did he deserve getting another shot at a world title at this stage of his career? No, that's fact. But he's a top geezer. I'm not going to begrudge him not getting a shot, especially with the way that his career has panned out and that he was robbed in Argentina, robbed in Germany. Sound man, have one last roll of the dice and let's see if you can. We said on last week's show, it's a tough ask. The chances of him doing it are very, very slim because he's fighting one of the most talented boxers in the UK, who just so happens to be a world champion. Now, again, on last week's show, we told you, how many times have we fallen asleep watching Billy Joe Saunders? How many times have we been just screaming at the television, come on, Billy, give us a bit more, man. Put your foot down now. Show us how ruthless you are. Show us that you're the guy, yeah? And this was the same thing. This was exactly the same thing. Billy Joe Saunders is cruising through a fight again. And even though it's up against our mate, I'm screaming after about five or six rounds going, right, Bill, foot down, go and make a statement now. Go and show Andrade, go and show Canelo, go and show Callum Smith, you're the dude. Whether it's at 160 or 168, you are the guy to be reckoned with in these weight categories. And I tell you something, I ain't buying a ticket anytime soon for a Billy Joe Saunders fight. I'm just not. It's a shame, man, because again, people remember me 2-3 years ago saying, this is the guy. This is the guy that could do Golovkin. This is the guy that could do Canelo. He's got all the skills in the world. He just needs the opportunity. Why is he going to get the opportunity? Because it don't sell. Nobody's asked. Nobody's bothered.
Yeah, if Billy Joe retired tomorrow,
won't be bothered.
Nobody would give a damn. Nobody, there wouldn't be any fanfare. There wouldn't be any fans clamoring and begging him not to do it or whatever it may be. It'd be like, yeah, man. Whatevs. He wouldn't be missed from the sport whatsoever. This was a big opportunity at the weekend, but I could see this coming a million miles away, which is why I predicted it in me column. And that's purely based on the fact that he's done this before, man. And you could just tell. Billy Joe Saunders, I just don't know what it takes to motivate the guy. You must realise that Callum Smith has got the chance that he was hoping for. He's fighting Canelo in 2 weeks' time. This was Billy Joe's opportunity. Against a 38... Listen, I love Martin Murray to bits. I've known him since he was a teenager. I was there when he won his ABA title. And I've covered his entire career. And him and his wife Gemma and the kids, the sensational people. And I want nothing but the good things for them all. But you're right, he should never have got this fight. He was. It came a couple of years too late for him, at least. And Billy Joe Saunders, to be honest with you, should be going through the gears against 38-year-old Martin Murray and putting on a show and putting in a big performance. When was it when he slipped that right hand from David Lemieux and looked out into the bleachers?
2 years ago.
3 years ago, 2017.
2017.
2017 it was. You know, and then prior to that, when he won the title against Andy Lee, 2015. Genuinely, he's 30-0, Billy Joe Saunders, and I can... 2, 3, maybe 4 performances in that entire run, which are memorable. It's not good enough. His return is not good enough. A 10% return on his output for entertainment. It's just not good enough, Billy Joe. You're supposed to be better than this. You're supposed to be the guy. You're telling us all. He's one of those fighters. He can talk the talk, Billy Joe, man. He just fucking never, ever walks the walk. He never, ever turns up. And again, unfortunately, if he walked away from the sport tomorrow, maybe the sport would be better without Billy Joe Saunders. You don't have to sit through his boring 12-rounders anymore.
Highly likely that it will be Zach Parker, his mandatory situation next, because I think the WBO are going to call something. A little bit of a shame for Zach at the weekend because his opponent, I think his final COVID test came back, didn't it, on the morning of the fight. I mean, it was geared for Zach to perform on Friday night, should I say, make a bit of a statement to excite fans where he's at, because he's a good little fighter, is Zach. I think he'll do well. But with all due respect to him, do you want to see Billy Joe Saunders, Zach Parker? Are you buying a ticket for that next? No, you're not. You're not, are you? Billy Joe, I just hope, and some of the stuff backstage was brilliant. from Martin Murray, Nigel Travis and Jamie Moore, they all said to him, they all said exactly the things that we're all thinking. Stay on it now, Bill, yeah? Stay on it now, Bill. And you've just got a feeling that he's going to go down as one of the biggest wastes of talent that we've ever seen. I just hope he gets his act together.
Just on Zach Parker. Why didn't he fight Zach Parker at the weekend and get that mandatory out the way? He must have known the WBO. They must have said to him, listen, man, if you're going to fight Martin Murray, tell you now, you're going to get, the day after, we're going to hit you with a 10-day, because they told him he's got 10 days now to announce his next opponent.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's got to be Zach Parker, who's the number two contender, whatever it may be. So if he's going to go and fight Bubo Andrade or Canelo next, Matchroom have got to inform the WBO within the next 10 days. Otherwise, they're going to force Zach Parker. Why wasn't he fighting Zach Parker here? Just to go, right, I'll do Zach Parker now, then WBO, and then you can fuck off, and then I can crack on and keep hanging around for the Canelo Callum Smith winner. Why didn't he do that? Like, why fight a 38-year-old Martin Murray and have Zach Parker penciled in for the undercard? Just fight the guy on the undercard. The whole thing is bollocks. The whole thing stinks of a load of shit again. Boxing, man. Honest to God. Fuck me. Jesus Christ. Boxing this week just stinks of putrid shite.
I'm trying my best to stay positive here, right? You're bringing me down. Stop it now, you. But I'm going to throw something at you now just to get you going again. Can James Tennyson beat Javonta Davis?
Yes. Yes. You know what? You don't call Johnny the Entertainer for nothing. That's all I'm going to say. Big Johnny Nelson may have put us all asleep when he was WBO champion of the world with his entertaining performances, his own 12-round runouts. But I tell you what, give the man a microphone and he's like Ricky Gervais stand up, isn't he, sometimes, Big Johnny? That was a classic. That was a line. Where, honestly, I nearly spat Jack Daniels all over my living room when he spat that one out. Absolutely remarkable. Brilliant. I love it. I love it, John. Listen, if it wasn't for Johnny Nelson, mate, that the quality. Listen, I'll tell you now, I was entertained watching that show on Friday, not because of Shannon Courtenay's knockout of the
girl off Tesco's checkout, yeah?
Not because of Billy Joe Saunders' boring 12-rounder against 38-year-old Martin Murray. And not because I thought, you know, James Tennyson's the second coming of fucking Barrera.
Golovkin? He's being called the Irish Golovkin, this kid.
But the reason I was entertained on Friday night, twofold. Johnny Nelson, the entertainer, and his outlandish comments. Go on, John! Keep us going, son. And number two, the professional crown green bowler himself, Mr. Edward Hayne, who clearly... I know what happened here. So Eddie has been backstage. Something's happened. The fight getting pulled off. The card's gone. Whatever it may be. He's had too many drinks the night before. Maybe he's had a curry. He's thought he had a fart coming. He's sharted. He's gone and shit his pants. His own house was too far away, so he's had to go home to his dad's house. He's gone to Barry's mansion. He's gone in Barry's wardrobe, and he's discovered there's only sky blue slacks. There's nothing but sky blue slacks in here. And he's thought, I can't get this away with me Hugo Boss top, so I'll change me top as well. I'll put this fucking, you know, fatter, weird, collared wool shit. Honestly, that outfit, absolutely remarkable. Edward and Johnny, thank you. You guys kept us all entertained on Friday night. Wonderful stuff. Wonderful. Top boxing needs more of. That's what we need more of. Outlandish 1970s clothing and outrageous comments. Outlandish comments, yeah.
Mm. Speaking about things outlandish, we will get back to boxing in a minute, but we're going to talk about entertainment now. First of all, Snoop Dogg is teaming up with Triller. So if anybody of profile wants to have a little bit of a knock, if you want to have a bit of a try at boxing, Snoop Dogg's your man. Go and see him. He'll put you in there. Actors, musicians, you name it, you've got it. Snoop's your man. He's going to commentate on it as well, which will be absolutely hilarious. It's always going to come. It was always going to come off the back of the weekend, mate. It was always going to come.
And listen, honestly,
1.6 million people bought that in America, Tyson Jones. 1.6. Let's put that into perspective, because Fury Wilder does 850,000 buys, and they do that on ESPN. ESPN's in 80 million homes in the United States of America. Triller's a brand spanking new app, and it's just done 1.6 million views. Now, people might say, well, that's the power of the YouTuber. Maybe so, but it's also nostalgia sells, mate, and it kind of rams home your point earlier on of Spence and Crawford not knowing how to sell a fight and not being superstar names. Where are the crossover names in boxing right now that the Americans are asked about? Manny Pacquiao? That's it. That's it, mate.
That's it. That's it. He's the only superstar in world boxing, let's be honest. Canelo only does massive numbers because all of Mexico buy every event.
Yeah.
But nobody else crosses over the way Manny Pacquiao does. There is nobody else except Floyd. Now Floyd's back, kind of. But just on the Snoop Dogg thing, like, listen, I've gone back, I've listened to extracts of Snoop. Some of it's absolutely hilarious. Some of it's brilliant. It's been made into GIFs and memes left, right, and center. I've seen people dubbing Snoop's commentary over other fights now, other knockouts, and it sounds awesome. I'll tell you why it's working. Yeah, man.
Exactly. Like two uncles fighting at a barbecue.
Exactly. And the reason it's working is because it's passionate. He is a passionate commentator. You can tell he loves boxing.
Yeah.
He's also Snoop, so he's cool as fuck. And you combine that, and you don't listen. This is where boxing's been going wrong for so many years. And you listen to commentary on other sports. Like, we listen to commentary in the UK, and okay, some of it's fucking abysmal. McManaman and Michael Owen, and you know, there's plenty of others who are awful. But Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville absolutely smash it. I think they're both absolutely brilliant on commentary because they've got that banter, that back and forth where they question each other, they'll have a laugh and all that kind of stuff. So there's real good stuff there. Long gone are the days of fucking Andy Gray and that other charlatan. But boxing is still using them guys. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's male, it's stale, and it's pale. Let's be honest. We need a fucking shake-up. We need something different. We need different voices, different sounds. And listen, I'll blow smoke up our trumpet. We've done bits for TalkSport, for UFC especially. And we have a laugh. We're fucking bouncing off the walls, and we're part of it. It's like what Snoop was saying. Oh, maybe Roy Jones, Mike Tyson. Woo-hoo-hoo! You can do that with Errol Spence and Danny Garcia. You can do that commentating on any fight. You can bounce off the walls. You're going to be happy to be there. You don't have to be, and not to fucking drag him over the coals again because I did it last week, but you don't have to be Richie Woodall at a fucking funeral. You can actually enjoy life and enjoy the fact that you're watching something remarkable. And I think it felt like a breath of fresh air to boxing just because we're so used to these monotone guys who've been doing it for 20, 30 years, or boxers who are just like, may have taken one too many punches to the head and are just like, yeah, man, well, you know, that's a good left jab and he's on the defensive now. Man, come on. Enjoy it. And that's why Snoop sounded awesome, because Snoop was all of us. Snoop was every boxing fan living his dream out, getting to commentate on two legends and was like, woohoo! Man, this is awesome. And also, he's not tied into a promoter, so he's not trying to blow smoke up your ass like so many commentators do. He hasn't got an agenda that he wants Mike Tyson or Roy Jones to win, or even the event to succeed, or because he's Chiller's fucking guy. He's just there going, hey, this is fucking awesome. Two fucking guys fight, two uncles fighting at a barbecue. He can get away with shit like that because he's Snoop. But anyone can get away with that. Fans want to hear passion. Fans want to be entertained. Yeah. I truly believe that. And Snoop will have a massive success. And hopefully we get more of that type of commentary coming into boxing like we have with other sports.
Do you know something?
We want to be entertained.
Yeah,
man.
I think in what you're saying, there's a lot there that the people will be nodding along at home listening to this. There's no doubt about it. And I've thought for a long period of time that boxing needs, I know they do this on the monster fights, but they don't do it to the level that they should be doing it. You have your commentator, you have your former fighter analyst, but you do need a color commentator. You need someone
color,
there to
yes.
add the 100%. Flavor. You need someone to hype the game up. And if you listen to a lot of boxing commentary, it's very, you've kind of said all the things that a lot of people are thinking. But if you were to add a third voice there, and that third voice isn't introduced and can only speak when spoken to, that third voice has got to be the person, representing the person at home. That's what that third voice has got to be there.
And 100%.
And to say it in layman's terms. Like you said, whether it's an energy thing, whether it's talking in non-technical terms, whatever it is, that person's got to be there in order to put some energy. And what you'll find and what we've found, again, we're giving ideas to people that are working for Sky and BT right now. But what we found when we've done this, that automatically then raises the energy level of the other people that are actually on the broadcast.
100%.
And they will play to that person. They will play to the third person. And then all of a sudden you've got energy just flowing through your speakers. Good energy as well, because you've got good analysis, because you've got an ex-world champion there talking about X, Y, and Z. You've got a play-by-play commentator that knows what they're seeing. But they're doing it. They're not playing off against each other's seriousness. They're playing off against the third person's excitement of being in that arena. And I think that's key. I think you're right. What we're seeing or what we're hearing is one thing. We're all there. We know what we're seeing. We're watching a fight. We get that. But when the fight isn't as entertaining as it should be, you need to be entertained in other ways. And you can find entertainment in a conversation. And that conversation needs to be implemented, I think, into the broadcast of the sport.
And there's two different, you know, there's the very different broadcasting, commentating on a TV broadcast and commentating on a radio broadcast are fucking completely different, because obviously in one, you do need that. You do need to spell it out so you can paint a picture in people's minds of what they're seeing. But that doesn't mean you can't have the energy on both. And I think especially now without the fans as well, I think it's been massively amplified how shitty the TV commentators are on boxing globally, not just in the UK, but globally. I have not been entertained. There's very few out there. I think Barry Jones is probably one of the best former pros analysts in the game, because he brings a lot of energy. He's fucking happy to be there. He's got a smile on his face, whether he's at Lee Leisure Centre or he's at fucking Wembley Stadium. He's one of those guys that seems to appreciate the fact where he is. And I get a buzz off that. But I think that's why Snoop has made such a big inroads. That's why everyone's gone, fuck me. Snoop is the guy. Snoop is the guy. No, Snoop is not the guy. Snoop has just brought energy to the table. Snoop's just got there and thought, man, I'm going to enjoy the fuck out of this, because if I was at home, he's going to be saying exactly the same things. He's going to be saying exactly to his mates around him. Yeah. And that's where the world is right now, man. Look at the success of our podcast and many other podcasts. People want to be in the group, man. They want to be sitting around the table with a few beers, having a chat. TV commentary can get to that point in some way. There's a bridge to cross. We don't need stale old men in sports jackets, monotone talking us through events. We need energy. We need a bit of fucking, come on, man. Woohoo! Let's go, baby. That's what we need. And that's, boxing hasn't caught up yet. Fight sport, you know, UFC, to be honest with you, go and watch a UFC event. Over the last 2 years, 18 months, the UFC have started using three men in the booth for every single event.
Yeah.
Used to be like boxing, used to be two. And then they started trying it with three. And now they use three for every single event because they know it works. You bring a Joe Rogan type color, flames, energy, an ex-pro who's actually got something about him, a Bisping or a Cormier, and then a fucking safe pair of hands like a John Anik. That's what you need. That's where you get the energy from.
Yeah.
And I think boxing, eventually it will catch up, but I just think the time would have been now, because there's no fans, there's no energy. Never has it been more critical for a commentary team to fucking get you excited at home. Mm. And we're not doing that. Boxing's not doing that.
Well, Snoop's teaming up with Triller to bring you these things, and he's going to be performing, let's say, on the night to bring us a night of entertainment, which kind of leads us on into Floyd and Logan Paul, yeah? I've had a good think about this over the last 24 hours, and I've thought to myself, I'm sandwich. And the reason why I'm sandwich is because it's not boxing.
Ching, ching, ching.
Yeah, well, ching, ching, ching for everybody. You know that these events are massive. The reason why they're happening is because they drive dollar. Simple as that.
Yes.
It's a numbers game. This is a numbers game at the end of the day. Now, there'll be proper boxing fans listening to this that will go, there's no way that Floyd generates money from this fight to the extent that he would do fighting Pacquiao, Conor McGregor. Well, hang on a minute. You're looking at it from a wrong point of view. The boxing world aren't going to buy this. We know that because you know that this isn't boxing. And get that out of your head. Stop looking at it like it's boxing. Look at it like it's Strictly Come Dancing or something, right? Because that's what this is. This is a night of entertainment. It's not a night of boxing. It's not a competitive sport. It's a night of entertainment where it just so happens that one of the best boxers of our generation is participating in something. It'll be a corrugated dance. He will carry this fella. I mean, they'll be hyped. Don't get me wrong. The press conferences will be amazing. They'll absolutely have you on the edge of your seat going, this fucking dude from YouTube thinks that he's going to fucking starch Floyd Mayweather, and Floyd will play it up, they'll ham it up, they'll get it sold. It'll happen on an over-the-top streaming service. People will buy it in the millions because the YouTube fella, I think he's got, what, 20 million people on his YouTube 22 channel?
22 million.
There you go. He's got 22 million followers there. Everybody knows who Floyd is. And they'll make this big narrative of, well, he's actually, Floyd's fighting a cruiserweight. He's fighting a cruiserweight. Yep, he's not even a fighter, right? So get all this out of your head. It'll be hammed up. It'll be WWE on fucking steroids is what it'll be. Rammed right up, and it'll be a night of entertainment, and everybody will have a bit of a laugh because Floyd will carry him for a good 5 or 6 rounds. He'll give you a bit of jeopardy in there. You'll make you think, whoa, Logan Paul's doing a bit. And then Floyd will go through the gears. The kid will get stopped by the referee because he's taken one too many body shots, and they'll all go home with $100 million in the back pockets. That's what it is. It's a night of entertainment. And sadly, again, coming back to what we were saying before about Crawford and Spence, this is why it's happening, because there's a massive gap in the market. Massive.
Mm-hmm.
The big boys in our sport are not doing it. They're not getting it on. They're not providing. They're not quenching that thirst. That's what's happening. So therefore, Floyd's gone. I'll go and quench that first. Mike Tyson's gone. I'll go and quench it. Even our own boy Glenn McCrory and Evander Holyfield, happening in April next year at the O2 Arena, they've gone, there's a gap in the market. People want to pay me fucking stupid money to have a roll around. We're a geezer my age. We can have a bit of fun. We can roll back the years. I can train for something, get fit, and feel the adulation of a crowd one more time. Yeah, I'm in, man. There's a gap, and people are jumping all over that gap. Don't get it mixed, though, with professional boxing, because that's not where it's at. It's something totally different, and I've absolutely no problem with it. Let him crack on.
Hey, I've got a problem with it.
And, why? And it's not a boxing. Why? It's not a boxing match. It's not boxing.
Because the reason I've got a problem with it is everything you've just highlighted there. Jake Paul versus the NBA guy, Holyfield versus Glenn McCrory, Tyson versus Roy Jones, Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. You know, they are all once were professional sportsmen and or fighters. And they are all evenly matched in regard to Paul fighting an NBA guy. They're both absolute novices, really. Okay, right. As it turned out, Paul had done a couple of years training and it was a sham. The difference here is that Logan Paul is not an athlete. He's not a sportsman. And right. He's taken on what was once an elite sportsman.
Right.
In a boxing ring as well. Yeah. It's not on an athletics track. They're not having a race. They're not playing an NBA game, a basketball game, or anything else where you can really control the parameters a lot more. This is still boxing. Now, they've had to dub it as entertainment purely and simply because even California State Athletic Commission wouldn't have allowed this one. Nobody would allow this one. Conor McGregor got a license to fight Floyd because Conor McGregor is a full-time fighter. And one of the facets of his training life is boxing. It was a complete sham and it should never have happened. But still, I can understand our board would license him, as bizarrely as it was, to take on Floyd Mayweather. The difference here, Logan Paul has had one, if you like, professional fight where he got fucked, as Dana White commented yesterday, where he got battered by an English video gamer. In KSI, that's right. His entire boxing experience is a non-licensed fight with KSI, which was a draw, apparently. And then they had a licensed fight in California in the rematch, which KSI won against Logan Paul. Now, Logan Paul is going to go into an entertainment fight. I just don't...
Mate, what it is...
I just don't get how this benefits boxing in any way, shape, or form.
No, you're looking at it wrong. It's not benefiting boxing. Doesn't benefit boxing at all. This is a white collar. It's a bit of... It's them lads seeing an opportunity to make massive money. Massive money. That's all it is. Floyd will carry him. Nobody in their right mind thinks, oh, he could fucking land on Floyd. He could hurt Floyd. He ain't even going to hit Floyd. Floyd's going to have a bit of fun with him. It's like paying Floyd... Can we have a little bit of a roll around for 9 minutes? Can we do that? Yeah, go on then, mate. Floyd is even where Floyd's at in his life right now, Floyd will have a little bit of a roll around. He'll have a bit of fun. He'll give the kid a little bit of something so he can take a memory away that he had a bit of a knock with Floyd Mayweather. And that'll be it. It's about dollar. Floyd, this is, again, it comes back to the sad indictment of where can Floyd make that money now? Floyd knows full well that he can't roll with the 147-pounders. In the real world right now, he can't roll with Terence Crawford. He can't roll with Errol Spence. They're too young, they're too fresh, and they'll cause him some serious problems, right? Where is the money for him in real boxing? Another one with Pacquiao? Do we want to see it? Nah, man. Not really that interested. So he's addicted to making dough. That's what Floyd's all about. He's addicted to it. That's why he goes out to Japan and he's having a bit of a mess about with tension. You know, all those types of things. This makes proper money. That's why Floyd's here. He knows there's no jeopardy. He knows it's not a fight. It's a piece of entertainment on the night that caters to a totally different audience. No boxing people are watching this. Come on, man. You know that. It's the YouTube kids. The YouTube kids are going to turn in and have a bit of fun with it.
Are they? Are they going to buy it, though?
Yes. 1.6 million people bought Tyson and Jones Jr.
Yeah, but I refuse to believe that number was driven by YouTubers. I believe that number was driven by 40-year-old boxing fans like us
maybe.
Who want to see Tyson and Roy Jones. That wasn't driven by Jake Paul fans. No fucking way.
A lot of it
that
is.
That was driven
A lot
by,
of it is. A lot
no,
of it is,
No, it was
mate.
Driven. No way. It was driven by
mean, no way?
Roy Jones and Mike Tyson fans.
I'm not saying that it's was, not. I'm not saying that was not a big percentage of what drove it. But are you telling me that Jake Paul had no influence on that number?
I'm not saying he had no influence, but I'm saying it was driven by the main event.
I reckon that he was drove at least here. Half those numbers, mate.
No chance. No chance.
It was no on a streaming service. Nobody knew about it. It was driven via, it's his channel. He half owns Thriller.
No, everybody knew about it. No, everybody knew about it because every single boxing outlet on the planet was talking about it.
No.
Mainstream broadcasters around the world put it on pay-per-view.
Boxing fans.
You presented it in the UK.
Right. Boxing fans. You're talking about boxing fans now. You're talking about boxing fans.
Yeah. Who drove it on a global scale.
I disagree.
The Thriller numbers in America only.
Right.
On a global scale, everybody was talking about it. Everyone was enamored in it because broadcasters around the world picked it up. I'm not saying that was a bad thing. Obviously, if BT probably did well out of it, so I'm saying, and I watched it and I was entertained by it.
There you go.
So
you were entertained.
I'm not knocking
by
it.
The entertainment what I'm aspect. Saying is, the entertainment aspect of that night is what drove that.
Yes, because it was two legends going in there for it. Public sparring session than if they'd a fucking public sparred in town and it'd cost me 50 quid to go into a local gym and watch it, by God, I'd have been first in queue because it was Roy Jones and Mike motherfucking Tyson. I don't care how old they were. I don't care how prearranged it was. They were going in the ring and I would have paid money to be there. That's the difference. This is Floyd Mayweather against Logan Paul. That's got zero interest to anybody on the planet.
No, surely. It's got zero interest.
Who wants to see that?
You're missing the point. It's got zero interest to boxing fans. Zero interest. I agree with you on that. But every single one of Logan Paul's followers will buy that.
Why?
Because they're fucking obsessed with this dude, mate. They watched him bloody go through that forest with that dead person. They're fucking... The world's weird. The world
they've
is
seen
weird.
Him in a boxing ring
Doesn't
in
matter.
California and they've
Doesn't
seen
matter.
Him get battered by KSI.
Doesn't matter. They'll sell a narrative of this. Look how the size of him compared to the size of this guy. That's what will be sold. It will do mad money. Fact.
No chance. This can't do it. For me, it can't do anything. It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Why?
Because
It makes money. The money makes the world go round, mate.
Just makes no sense to me whatsoever. Logan Paul has had one professional fight.
It's not a
and
fight.
He got beat
it
by
is
a
not,
video gamer.
Mate, it is not a fight. Stop.
So
thinking.
Why would people want to see it? If they know it's going to be a preordained dance.
No. You are thinking as a boxing person. Stop doing that. Stop thinking as a boxing person that watches boxing and watches fights. You're not that person now. You're a gamer, right? You're a kid that's never watched boxing. Never watched it. You're the guy that you're obsessed with now. Your kids watch all these YouTube channels. They're obsessed with people opening fucking presents rather than actually playing with their own shit. The game has changed. The world has changed. These people are obsessed with these YouTube people. The YouTube guy now is going to box this world famous boxer. They don't know who the world famous boxer is. They've never heard of Floyd Mayweather. They don't know who he is. But they've heard of Logan Paul. They go, fucking hell, I'm in. Dad, I need 20 quid. I need 70 quid. I want to watch this. This is what I want to watch. Right, okay then. I'm telling you now, it does massive, massive money.
So the undercard, because it's an exhibition. It's an exhibition bout. So
you watch. There
can't be
KSI
any,
will
be
on
licensed boxers on it.
You watch it. KSI will
KSI
be on
KSI won't be on it. I guarantee KSI's not on it. I bet you, because I spoke to him and he said he'd never, ever do it again. KSI won't be on it. Jake Paul will be on it.
Right.
And all these other YouTubers will be on it.
Right.
And it'll become a night of YouTube fighting. But I just don't understand. It's mad. It's fucking mad. The world's gone mad. My issue with it is, this is going to overtake proper boxing.
You're probably
this whole
right.
circus
you're probably right with that. You're right with that.
It's going to overtake boxing.
Yeah.
Because next year we might get Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua, and this might do bigger numbers. That's what you're saying. This might do bigger numbers.
Yeah, it will. Because look, again, I'm giving you facts now. Wilder Fury 2, the biggest fight of our generation so far in the heavyweight division, did 850,000 buys in America. Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. on an app did 1.6 million pay-per-view buys. Nearly double. That's where we're at. That's where we're at right now.
I know, but I keep coming back to the fact that that was a big draw for boxing fans from nostalgia point of view as well. Our generation, that was unmissable. And they played up to it with Snoop and all that. We talked about it last week. They fucking nailed it on Triller. I just don't understand. Other than Logan Paul's, the kids who watch Logan Paul and would pay to fucking see him take a shit.
Yeah.
Other than them.
Yeah.
No boxing fan's going to buy it. No one's going to go watch it and go,
you don't need him.
One last chance to see Floyd.
Don't need him. You don't need him. You've got 20 million people sat on his fucking channel ready to go, mate. You don't need him. You only need a small percentage of them 20 million to buy in. That's all you need. Agreed?
The world's gone mad. The world's gone mad.
I'm telling
Stop,
you.
Stop, I want to get off.
Mate, do you want to talk about pay-per-view this weekend?
The world's fucking gone mad. I want to get off. Having a look now. The fight, Logan Paul versus KSI generated 1.3 million views.
There you go. There you go.
Worldwide.
There you go. There you go. Right, let's talk AJ, shall we? Let's get you back on the old boxing train. I'm really looking forward to this week because this is an opportunity for Anthony Joshua to get back to his devastating best. Pulev is old, he's slow, he moves in straight lines, and we haven't seen something devastating from Anthony Joshua for nearly 2 years now. This is the moment, this weekend. Because
you
will now. listen, this weekend, there's an opportunity to go back to everything that we've been saying in this podcast, to really put boxing on the map. AJ, the biggest commercial star that we have in the UK. I think that's quite obvious.
Mm-hmm.
He fights, he's IBF mandatory. And listen, it'll be sold to death to you this week. Absolutely ram down your throat. Oh, he's, you know, Pulev against this guy or Pulev against that guy. He's been there, done it. He's got the T-shirt. He's got great amateur pedigree. Listen, he's old, mate. He's old. He ain't causing AJ any bother whatsoever this weekend. He is made for AJ. AJ should be taking this dude out within 6 rounds. Devastating fashion. He should have him on the hook and he should be blowing him away. Then he should be getting on the microphone and saying, right, Tyson Fury, where are you at? I'm sick of all these bums. I'm sick of all this now. Talking's been going on for too long. Me and you, bro. Let's rock and roll. I mean, in the ideal world, Tyson Fury will be there and they'll get in the ring. They'll sound off. And we'll all get excited for something that's going to happen at the first 6 months of next year. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not, but fingers crossed, that is what we get. The fight is just a vehicle to that moment for me this weekend. It's not competitive. It's just a vehicle to that moment.
Yeah, completely agree. Rather like Danny Garcia was brought in and tailor-made to make Errol Spence look good. Kubrat Pulev is exactly the same for Joshua. I completely agree with you. Joshua gets in there. He's got to look explosive. He's got to go viral. He's got to fucking smash this guy to bits.
Yeah.
And as you say, the most important part is what he does on the microphone then. Because there is only one name we want to hear on his lips. I don't care if he has to give up the WBO belt to make it happen. I do not want to hear them start talking about fighting Alexander Usyk. All I want to hear them say is that's it. Apparently the deal is done. Mm. Apparently the conversation's happened. It's been arranged. 50-50. All the belts on the line. No more questions. Let's do it. Whether it's the first of two, the first of three fights, I don't care. But for the good of boxing, for every reason we just talked about for the last 40-odd minutes of this show, whatever it is.
40-odd? We've been here for an hour and a half, mate, nearly. People are getting the money's worth out of us today.
For the good of boxing, Anthony Joshua has got to destroy Khabrat Pulev and draw a line in the sand regarding Tyson Fury and order, demand, clamour for, push all the conversations out of the equation and just go, it's happening, it's happening next. I'm ready. I'm ready to sign. The deal's been done. Let's go. And push it back onto Tyson Fury to go, yeah, man, let's go. Let's fucking do it. 50-50, all the belts in the new year, a packed Wembley Stadium, although it's more likely going to be the Middle East. At this point, I don't care. Boxing just needs these two to fight. It needs the attention. It needs to remind the world that boxing can be entertaining in the modern day. You don't need legends or YouTubers to come out, crawl out of the woodwork for boxing to be fun, to be entertaining.
Yeah.
There's guys out there now that could stand and compete in any era of the sport. And Joshua and Fury need to remind the world that they are the kids at the top of the tree during a great period in the history of heavyweight boxing. We need reminding of that. The world needs reminding of that. These guys have got to fight. And it all starts on Saturday night with Joshua demanding Fury fights him.
I feel a little bit for Lawrence Okoli. I know he's been in camp working very hard with Shane, working towards a shot at a world title. At the moment, that's off. He has got a fight. He is going to be fighting Nikodem Jezuski from Poland, who is 19-0. Jezuski actually fought at the weekend, got on a plane on Sunday and entered the bubble straight away. And I'm led to believe that Eddie Hearn is trying to work his magic with the WBO to try and keep a world title or some version of a world title on the line for Lawrence Okoli. Listen, for Lawrence, yeah, I can understand that, but let's be straight. Come on, man. You can't just shoehorn the number 50 in the world into a fight on 7 days' notice and then all of a sudden it's for a world title. That's just not how this game works. That's not how it should work. It will work probably that way in some way, shape or form this weekend, but let's keep it real. It's not a world title fight until your man Glowacki's back after his bout of COVID. Fingers crossed he gets better soon and we can actually get a proper fight on for the light heavyweight. For the cruiserweight vacant belt. Because look, I think Lawrence Okoli deserves a proper test. You don't want a knockover, do you? Because there'll always be an asterisk. If he beats a kid that was number 50 in the world for a world title, everybody's just going to go, what the fucking point in that? That's not a real world title. You've got to go and fight the other guy.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I'm gutted, as you say, gutted for Okoli because he's worked hard and he deserves the opportunity.
And what a story. What a story if he managed to do it in a legit fight. It'd be amazing.
Of course. Well, that's the difference, you see. And you're telling me there's not somebody ranked in the top 20 on the planet that would jump into a world title fight even at a week's notice. Even look at the light heavyweight. Is there no one at light heavyweight in the top 10 that would jump at a fight against a kid who's only had 14 pro fights to fight for the world cruiserweight title? I fucking guarantee there is. Mm. Going down to the number 6 ranked Polish cruiserweight for a world title is not the solution. But listen, man, I seen fucking Rachel Ball fight for a world title the other week against some girl he pulled off of the school run, so anything can happen. Anything can happen.
Over in the States, Shakur Stevenson's back in action. My boy, Edgar Belanga, 15 wins, 15 first-round knockouts. He's back in action this weekend, so keep an eye on him. And Felix Verdejo is top of the bill. That's in the top rank bubble. But let's be honest, that's just the hors d'oeuvres, I suppose, to what we expect at the weekend, where the unified heavyweight champion of the world, Anthony Joshua, is back in action. And we should be excited about this. It's all right rolling our eyes and what have you. We should be excited at the fact that Joshua has an opportunity at the weekend just to remind everybody that he is devastating. To the casual eye, it doesn't matter who he's knocking out. It doesn't matter. And we know what the situation is with the old fella that he's having to go at this weekend. But to the casual eye, it doesn't matter. That viral moment is key. Starch the kid. Starch him. Absolutely marmalize him. Get it all over Instagram. Remind everybody who you are and then play that off against what Tyson Fury did against Deontay Wilder earlier on in the year. Get on the microphone and give us the soundbite, mate. That's what we need. That's what we need this weekend.
We sure do. We sure do. And just before we sign off, there's a couple of events on Friday night as well as that fight in the car park in Sheffield. I kid you not. The drive-up event where you drive up in your car and park up and watch from your car. That's on Friday night. That's a Dennis Hobson show. And then there's a cracker there as well on Channel 5. Mick Hennessy's got a show with headline by Sam Eggington against Ashley Theophane. Mm. Two British veterans of the game. Theophane, obviously based out of Mayweather's gym forever and a day. And Super Sam, who's obviously still reeling on the back of that terrible Ted Cheeseman robbery, which he suffered at the hands of matchroom judges recently. So I'm expecting a big fight on Friday. I think that could be an absolute cracker, Eggington versus Theophane on Channel 5.
Hmm. Ian John Lewis is one of the judges for that as well, by the way. Just thought I'd let you know. Thank you very much for listening to us. I know we went on a bit today, but there were a lot to talk about, lots of action, and there'll be a lot to talk about next week as well as we build up towards Canelo Smith off the back of AJ demolishing Kubrat Pulev. So that'll be next week's show, so make sure you come and join us for that. Also, Golovkin's in action next week as well. Fucking hell, we've got another bumper show to get stuck into next week, haven't we? Anyway, make sure you subscribe to us. iTunes, Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. FightDisciples.com is our website for anything Android. You can get all our social media on there as well. And get your beer in before Christmas. Proper Tackle available on our website, FightDisciples.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.